This is a Triple J podcast.
The kind of silence of the grief and the silence and taboo around miscarriage, I was really aware of other people's squeamishness, that it was a thing that shocked people when you brought it up.
Hey, Dee here, and this episode is part two of our chat that we've been having around miscarriages and pregnancy loss. So part one is already in your feeds, and it's called What is a Miscarriage and What to Expect? You don't need to have listened to that episode to listen to this one, by the way, but I definitely recommend it. In that chat, I spoke to a gynecologist who helped us understand how miscarriages happen, why they happen, how common they are, and what to expect that you might experience and what recovery looks like and those kind of physiological things. And you also heard from author and writer Jess Kirkness, who recently lost a pregnancy a few months ago. And she spoke about what that was like for her. Basically, she didn't know. It was, you know, looking hopeful and then it wasn't for about a month. So she was in waiting. And then she eventually got the confirmation that it was a miscarriage and had to have surgery. And it just had such a huge impact on her emotionally. She has PCOS and endo, and having a baby is something that she really wants together with her partner, which is what you're going to hear a bit more about in this episode, what she went through and the emotional impact of that loss. And you're also going to hear from Dr. Jade Belliardi. She's the co-lead of Miscarriage Australia and is also an adjacent associate professor at Monash University and the University of Melbourne. And we're going to hear a little bit about what the research shows about the psychological impact of pregnancy loss and why it's quite common to feel alone. And then you're going to hear from Dr. Claire Bellhouse, who is a clinical psychologist, and get some advice on how to heal and best support as a friend or partner. Also, even if you're not someone who can physically have a baby, or you don't want kids, or this isn't something that you want anytime soon, this episode is still super important for anyone to listen to, because we know that 1 in 4 pregnancies will end in a miscarriage. So I think that, yeah, even if this is something that you don't really relate to, I think it's important to kind of understand that this is something that a lot of people that you know will probably go through. And if this chat brings up anything for you, we've got resources that you can reach out to in the show notes. But now let's get into the episode. Here's the rest of my chat with Jess. Let's talk about that grief. What did that look like and feel like for you? Because like you said, it's so individual and can look so many different ways for anyone experiencing a pregnancy loss.
For me, I think miscarrying just before Christmas felt especially cruel somehow, that it was such an otherwise joyful time of the year. And as a result of being physically unwell, but also quite emotionally unwell, I opted out of a lot of things that might have otherwise brought me joy and comfort, and I attended the social events that I could attend. But again, I think those things were quite fraught, that I knew I was carrying this awful thing, and I felt like a black cloud, and that it was quite hard to broach the conversation around miscarriage, that we had had this loss, this blow. And I felt like a dark rain cloud coming into these events, and that somehow my grief was contagious, or I needed to contain it. And I desperately wanted to speak it. I really wanted it not to be Christmas so I could fall in a heap and process it accordingly. But I felt like I needed to put that on hold to some extent. And people in my family and my friends were extraordinarily generous and cared for us beautifully. We received so many thoughtful messages and gestures. People left food at the door. They gave us, you know, Uber Eats vouchers, flowers, they checked in with us, sent voice notes, all of those beautiful things. But it was such a busy time otherwise, and people were otherwise occupied. So it was a really strange concoction of things that complicated my grief, I think. And I'm still experiencing that grief, I think. It still feels raw to some extent. It has a long tail, and, you know, I would now be halfway through a pregnancy. And sometimes when I think about where I am in the year, I think, oh, now I'd be 18 weeks, now I'd be 20 weeks, now I'd be 25. My baby would have been born in July. They would have had the same birth month as me and my husband. You know, all of those possibilities occur to me at different junctures in the year.
You mentioned in your article that you wrote that I knew the statistic up to 1 in every 4 pregnancies ends in miscarriage. This was quite possibly the biggest club I'd ever been a part of, and yet I felt desperately alone. Talk us through that feeling of that aloneness.
I think because pregnancy is such an interior sensation and experience that this was happening in my body and not my husband's body, for example. This was a little companion that I'd been carrying, a little sidekick that was not visible to anybody, but I've had a lot of physical sensations during that early pregnancy, and I felt like I'd fostered some kind of a relationship, almost a dialogue with this little being, and that had been lost. So it was the idea of being alone now in my body, that companion leaving, but also the kind of silence of the grief and the silence and taboo around miscarriage. I was really aware of other people's squeamishness around discussing miscarriage, and that it was a thing that shocked people when you brought it up, and that, there's always that awkward pause in conversation, and some people were more comfortable than others, I think, and I think there's generational differences there too. But I was really aware of it being an unpalatable conversation, and it felt really lonely to keep it in. I felt obliged to keep it in to some extent, or only do what was polite, what was reasonable in company. So there was the aloneness there, but also communicating it to my husband, who was endlessly supportive and wonderful. But I couldn't quite explain to him that, no, I had these cravings and bodily sensations, and that felt like a kind of relationship blooming, and that I couldn't fathom that all of this was happening. I couldn't wrap my head around it.
How else did you feel supported? Because I know that you spoke about in your article as well that you did feel like you had a small community around you. And, for people listening, we had a few listeners say, like, I don't know how to support, like, what's the best way to support someone going through this? What did you find worked really well?
I really appreciated talking about it. So the way that I've found light in the situation and empathy and compassion, I mean, compassion was there in abundance, but I think the empathy was really important for me, that I spoke to lots of women who had experienced the same thing, that even finding women on the internet, reading their stories or listening to their stories in podcasts, I found really helpful. And suddenly, in talking about it, I found all these people in my extended family who had experienced a miscarriage that I had no idea about. Sometimes friends or acquaintances, as soon as I kind of spoke this truth aloud, it offered them a space to share with me and commiserate. And that fellow feeling was really important, I think, for me as I was going through this and counteracted some of that loneliness I was feeling. It is a lonely club, I think, but also it's a big club. It's a huge club of people who have experienced this or have been touched by it in some way. And I think that's been quite astounding, especially watching the article come out and seeing how many people's lives this affects, so many people per year. So that's been really helpful, I think. In terms of helping, I think speaking about it, asking about it, whenever I was given the floor, I felt really grateful when someone would check in and ask how I was. I really wanted people to sit with me, especially in the waiting period. I think I found that extraordinarily difficult. I think some people had the sense that they needed to hang back, whereas I actually really wanted to talk about it. And I think everyone will be different in that regard, but for me, I'm a verbal processor, and I really just needed to purge it and to make sense of it.
Of course, I feel like so many people will relate to that. Is that like a huge reason why you wanted to do this article and to even come on the hookup today?
Definitely. I think it's really important to share some of these experiences, especially because they're so widespread. If the story can offer any solace or comfort to someone else out there, then I think it's worthwhile for me. I think also it gives some value maybe to the loss, that it is some kind of legacy that might turn a lemon of a situation into lemonade.
Well, Jess, it definitely will. And I think that, like you said, this is something that isn't spoken about. I have friends that have experienced it and have also felt really alone. The stats speak for themselves. Like you said, it's a huge club. It's something that a lot of people will go through in their lifetime. So it means so much to have you share your story today. And I think for a lot of people listening, it'll make them feel really comforted in what they've maybe gone through themselves and not being able to talk about it or hear stories that are similar. So, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
If you want to hear more of Jess's story, it's linked in the show notes. And yeah, listen to episode one as well if you want to find out a bit more about how it happened. But now we're going to find out a bit more about what the research shows. So Jess is obviously just one experience, but I wanted to find out a bit more about what is common for people to go through when it comes to pregnancy loss. And so now you're about to hear from Dr. Jade Belliardi. She's the co-lead of Miscarriage Australia and adjacent associate professor at Monash Uni and the University of Melbourne. And this is something that she has been studying for years.
So what we know is that for many people, experiencing a miscarriage or miscarriages can have quite significant psychosocial impacts on them. And we know that it's very common for people to experience emotions such as grief, anger, frustration, sadness, and that in actual fact, you know, levels of anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress disorder are actually quite common, not just in the sort of days and weeks following, but even for some people in the months and even years following their experience of miscarriage. So quite significant impacts for a lot of people. For a lot of people, it's not just the loss of the pregnancy itself, but everything that's tied to that. So for a lot of people, from the moment they know they're pregnant, you know, and they get those two lines, they're thinking of the future. So they're thinking of the future. They may be finding out the due date, thinking of names, all sorts of plans that start to sprout. And so it's a real loss of those hopes and dreams.
Are there patterns in how people process those experiences, or can it be incredibly individual? Like I mentioned, you know, for some people maybe it is absolutely life-changing and devastating, but then for others it might be a little bit like, I'm just going to get on with it.
I think it really depends on their own personal situation. You know, for some people, yes, it is absolutely devastating for many people. For other people, they may even feel relief, you know, and that's okay too, for whatever reason. Some people may view it very pragmatically, you know, it is something that often happens in pregnancy. So they may view it in that way and feel able to go on. But I really do think it depends on the individual as to how they feel about that pregnancy. And even then, they may not expect to feel the emotions that they feel.
Something that we did speak about in the last episode we did was just how common miscarriages and pregnancy loss are. They can range from somewhere between 1 in 4 to 1 in 10, depending on what research and what age you are. But it is something that we know isn't really spoken about. Does the fact that it isn't a common thing to discuss change the way people process those emotions?
Look, I'm sure that it does. People often feel, you know, the other feelings that I suppose I didn't touch on before is that people often feel really isolated and alone in their loss because we don't speak about miscarriage, because we sort of have this unwritten societal rule around the 12-week loss. And so when people around those who are pregnant don't realize they're pregnant and then they experience that loss, they often end up feeling really, really alone and isolated, you know. And they also can be expectations around how long people's grief should last, you know, an expectation that they need to get on with things. And for a lot of people, that's just not the case. As I mentioned before, for some people, the feelings of grief and loss can last for months, if not years. So I do think that a lot of people, their feelings of loss are exacerbated by that isolation that they feel and the lack of support they feel. In fact, we know that a lack of social support can actually exacerbate those feelings of grief and loss, and that in turn, having strong support around people can actually help mitigate against that or buffer them against that grief and loss. So having support around people who are pregnant and who've experienced early pregnancy loss is very important.
Where do you sit then, and what has, you know, the experience of the research and the work that you've done lead you to feel about the 12-week, 10 to 13-week rule then, and the way that that can change the support that you might have? Because people, I know a lot of friends who haven't told anyone because they are trying to follow that rule.
Yes. Look, again, it's very much up to the individual. You know, we hear from people who say that they didn't tell anyone in their first pregnancy because of the whole 12-week rule, which, you know, is based around the fact that after 12 weeks, or actually just before, but after 12 weeks, you know, your chance of having a miscarriage drops significantly. Therefore, it's this sort of safe period in which to tell people that you're pregnant. But the problem with that is that if you haven't told people around you that you're pregnant and then you experience a miscarriage, then often people aren't there to support you because they didn't know you were pregnant, you know. So again, that can leave people feeling very alone and isolated, but it all depends on the individual.
Why is it something that isn't really spoken about?
People don't often talk about their experiences openly, again, often because of this 12-week rule. And what we've found through our research has also shown us that it's not till people start actually opening up about experiencing a miscarriage that they realise how many people around them have also experienced a miscarriage, whether it be their sister, their mothers, their aunties, their grandmas. That's when people often realise how many people around them have also experienced a miscarriage. So I think there's also this guilt and shame and this feeling of failure that people often talk about when they experience a miscarriage that possibly also stops people from talking about it more openly.
Okay, so we know that it's super common. We know that a lot of people can feel really alone. So how do we work through the emotional impact? Well, now you're going to hear from Dr. Claire Bellhouse. She's a clinical psychologist and also on the advisory committee for Miscarriage Australia. And here's my chat with her to get you some advice. Dr. Claire, thank you so much for coming on The Hookup.
Thanks.
So we had a couple of questions from our listeners about how to actually deal with the psychological and emotional impacts that you might experience through having a miscarriage or a pregnancy loss. Someone here saying, from a psychologist's perspective, how do people begin to process and move through the emotional impact of miscarriage?
David Kessler, who's a specialist in grief, often talks about the fact that grief is as unique as a fingerprint. So it's quite hard to say how everybody should process and move through the grief of a miscarriage, because the meaning of the miscarriage is going to differ for everybody, and what people find most helpful is going to differ as well. But I think one thing with miscarriage is that it is often quite silent and something that people feel like they go through alone, especially because sometimes it happens before anyone else even knows that they're pregnant, other than maybe partners. I think the thing that a lot of people seem to find helpful is doing something symbolic and something that they feel acknowledges the loss in a way. So some people might do things like have a small ceremony at home or release balloons or go to a particular spot and say something, write something. I think doing something that feels like a symbolic acknowledgement is often really useful, and often speaking to people around you about what's happened so that you don't feel as isolated and alone is another really important part. But it is difficult. It doesn't have the same shared grieving and rituals that a lot of other types of loss have.
We had another question from a listener asking, what's the best way for a partner to support a partner's miscarriage?
When we did research with partners, they spoke about often feeling they needed to be in a role of supporting their partner when they had a loss. And again, I think probably you would know your partner better than anyone. The thing I would always say is ask the person what they need and what would be helpful. But I think some of the basic important things are being there for them, listening, validating the loss, not minimizing it, or kind of making comments that dismiss the grief and loss, because it can be really significant. And I would very much be guided by what the person is telling you or showing in need.
Is it common for partners who haven't experienced the actual physical loss to feel like their grief maybe isn't as valid? Or
so partners will often talk about feeling like yes, I'm upset, or yes, I'm grieving, but it's nothing compared to what my partner's going through, or it didn't actually happen to me. So I think in those ways, it can be at times even harder for partners to get support or to feel they can ask for it or that it's valid. But it absolutely is. I mean, often it's, you know, it was both of your baby.
How can couples avoid drifting apart during this time?
Gosh, these are good questions. I think I'm going to hate my answer. Again, it's going to be very individual up to the couple. I would say doing your best to listen to each other and be there to support each other. And again, not minimizing or dismissing this as not important. I think when we talk about, Pauline Boss often talks about a term called ambiguous loss, which is a type of loss that isn't as obvious. So it's like losing, you know, a person walking and talking that we can all grieve together about. And I think miscarriage fits that really well, that the loss can feel less obvious and less acknowledged. So I think it's really important that as the couple, who are the two people often who would feel this most intensely, that you are able to be there for each other and take it quite seriously.
We had a question from a listener that says, what's the best thing to say to comfort a friend who's just had one?
I think acknowledging it, saying that you're sorry for their loss, and avoiding saying some of the common things people say. So often, you know, when you've had a miscarriage, people will say things to you like, oh, at least it happened early. At least, you know, you can get pregnant. I would avoid saying anything like that that dismisses or minimizes what they've gone through.
This was a really interesting one because I think that, when you get into a certain period in your life, a lot of your friends might be going through pregnancies. But if you're someone who maybe has some struggling or having some issues or dealing with pregnancy loss or miscarriage, it can kind of put this dynamic between you and your loved ones where you want to be excited for them when it's happening. But how do you navigate your grief and the impact of what you're going through when everyone around you seems to be getting pregnant and you know, going through the thing that you so desperately want?
A really hard situation to be in, really hard, and I think really common. I think the other thing I would say, though, is miscarriage is also really common. It's 1 in 4 confirmed pregnancies, and probably much higher than that in pregnancies that haven't been confirmed by a doctor. So chances are, if you start talking about having had a miscarriage, what you will find is a lot of women will come out and say, oh yeah, that happened to me. So I think it is really useful to connect with other women who've been through something similar so you don't feel like you're the only one. The other thing I would say is, you know, a lot of women talk about the fact that they can actually hold it separately. I can be happy for you and sad for me at the same time. And I think that can also be hard for the people who are excited about getting pregnant and having a baby, who want to be sensitive to someone who's had a miscarriage. And so I think, again, talking and listening and hearing about what is most useful for the person. I think also remembering that often people can hold both.
And just lastly, Claire, when should someone consider, you know, professional support or reaching out to get some extra help with what they're experiencing?
I think anytime someone feels it would be useful for them. I think having someone that you can talk to without feeling you have to filter or be careful of their feelings or not be too intense or whatever it is, I think anytime someone feels that would be useful, it's a good idea. I also think probably anyone would benefit from having someone to talk it through with. It doesn't have to be an individual psychologist. There's also lots of services like Bears of Hope that have ways that you can get some more professional support or information.
Perfect. And we'll add those resources in our show notes as well for you listening. But Claire, thank you so much. This has been so useful. Really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me.